there's a button.
Yeah, just.
Yeah, I'll skip about the first one. I'll skip about the first one. I know there's pizza probably waiting.
No, not yet.
We'll know what's coming. Now, when the room empties out, the food is there.
What's that here?
No, I guarantee I'll get the first one there. The first thing I want to say is, now, look, the philosophy for building this code is basically lack of equivalence theorem, which tells you, I'm not going to go through all the details like I was planning, but it tells you two things. One is that if you don't do a convergence test, long-term convergence test in the physical result, then it's crap. Okay, the second thing is that we don't need to compare codes. I disagree with Wyman a little bit here, suggesting like we should compare results or something. If you have a code that's consistent and stable, the solution to the finite difference equation will converge to the solution to the differential equation, period. I don't care what it is.
Wait. But I think that's only the theory is only proven and true for linear equations.
No,
it doesn't matter. We can still say that we think that it works and it's principle and
take it. You wanted to have convergence, but if you have a nonlinear equation which develops singularity, the normals operator cannot be bounded there, so it cannot be stable.
If they discover a system in which two different ways converge beautifully and give different answers, then they've got a very strongly publishable result.
Yeah.
Total revolution in computer science.
Just converging shows you satisfy the equation of motion inside the computational domain. You can put a different result from different outer boundary conditions.
So the past 20 minutes I've been showing you all the consistency tests that we've done. The one thing we haven't done, which I want to propose, that maybe could be a standard that everyone does, and that we will do in the next couple months, is to compute the residual of all 10 Einstein equations from the 4D covariant form of the equations with a reconstructed 4 metric. So as you evolve, you say three levels of the 3 metric, the lap and the shift, and you reconstruct the 4 metric, and you can compute from the covariant form of the equations a residual to all ten Einstein equations, which will be independent because it will be covariant. Your 3 plus 1 probably isn't covariant. It isn't covariant form. And so you can construct second order, on this slide, you can construct second order accurate in space and time residual evaluator of all 10 Einstein equations.
Why do you have residuals of the equations that you were solving?
Because these are very complex equations. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of lines of code. If there's one X that's turned into a Y, then you can't use lattice.
Not only that, the thing is, if you take a set of differential equations and you difference it incorrectly, it is still possible that in differencing incorrectly, you will get a continuum solution which converges. It's converging to the wrong thing. Then if you
but when you check it, won't
you? You know, you check it with an independent implementation.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I usually use an independent residual.
Yeah, okay. If you got a different algorithm to check it, then.
So if you do this,
no one's really done this yet.
If you do this,
well, it is as far as
you
know. Well, I do this routine, not the whole thing.
Could be done for stability, but also I don't see any reason why we can't do a full-run Norman stability analysis for your evolution method on the fly. I mean, there's a standard procedure for doing this. As we start to really get into dynamics, you know, the eigenvalues, these are nonlinear equations, so the eigenvalues of the update operator are not going to be constant. That if you could very well start evolving and your the eigenvalues of your update operator could go larger than one. Okay, it, you know, I think you know, I don't know the next year this will be true, but I, certainly in fact in the next 10 to 20 years, this is something that I think is probably routine. And von Neumann-Lilly analysis on your evolution on you know, at every concept on the fly, not maybe at every point, but that would be very sensitive.
Okay, actually, it's probably. It wouldn't be von Neumann though, right? Because you're also taking into account the boundary conditions.
Yeah.
Great.
I mean the local thing and the boundary.
Well, they are teaching, they ask you in the room.
Because John, I'm going to cry again. But here's what I did. This is the GCD, the GC component of the metric, or the pre-metric, sorry, that gives you along this x-axis, along this z-axis. And I evolved up to 33 milliseconds at four different resolutions. Question is, at this time, what would the analytic value, that is, if you could solve the difference of ways exactly, what would be the actual value? I mean, it looks like it's converting to something. You could say it'd be around 13, but what? And with what error can you, from this data, can you actually say, you know, what that value is? And I'm just using this as an example. Who cares what the GZP metric, the GZ metric is? The GZ component of the metric is. It's not important. But physical though, you could actually go through this procedure. So, just off the top of my head, I could just thought of three different ways of computing a value, and then you could just use these values in different, and you know, compute them, average and standard deviation, and error bar for your method. So method number one is, so I have four observed quantities, right? I made four runs of different resolutions. The error for method one of calculating was number. I just assumed that it was, you know, it was some constant plus a linear order error term, quadratic, and something cubic in the error term. So you have four unknowns, and you fit, and you find those four unknowns, four observed things, and you get a number. Method two, you assume it's converging to something plus some quadratic error. Method three, you assume it's converting that some linear error. And so you just take these three numbers, find the average and the standard deviation, and then you have an error bar.
The important thing is to see if that converges quadratically.
But it's more complicated than that because we use methods that use second order methods, shot capping methods.
No, but there's I think that the overriding principle is if you've got things at two resolutions, right, then the difference between those, what the bound on gives you within a factor, a constant factor, the error in either resolution.
Right.
So if this fraction is smaller. Why do we want to, it's an error estimate. We don't need to know that the error is 1.234. We need to know that it's 1.
Okay.
If we could get it more accurately, then we could extrapolate.
So what would your error be for that?
What?
What would your error be? What would you call the error?
The difference between the last two calculations.
But yeah. These aren't factors of two difference in delta z.
Well, doesn't matter. Still, it'll be of order the error in the calculation.
Yeah. So what if I use a delta z of 0.14 and then I use a delta z of 0.14?
Yeah, you make a Richard extrapolation.
It's still an error, estimate of the error in the calculation. As long as you keep that factor constant, if you change the resolution, it will be
constant.
Well,
I think it's the final formula that we
shows that as you approach the maximum mass, as it takes to start near the maximum mass, the allowed numerical power in order to get a stable configuration goes to zero. That's because you need a very precise conservation of total mass energy and total less mass in your numerical curve. And that's the one example that one nice numerical equation that these guys performed, I estimated that the tolerance was something like 0.7%, and it would have to do better than 0.7%. And that's because of a flat plateau.
All the same, he does have a couple calculations here with the varying by what factor, too. He can sit down and work out the numbers.
All I'm saying is that the reason why numerical accuracy has to be.
I understand that this is talking about how to estimate what the accuracy is.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Well, I think that's all been wrong.
I think you're being too dismissive.
I'm not being dismissive about it. I'm saying that I think that if you make this ansatz, that your functions are behaving as u plus h times v1
Well, it's only estimated.
It, of course, it's always estimated. Right. What Mark is proposing here, I see, is a convention for all of us to use so that we have, when we report, we have the same thing to report so that we can always
come back. That's called
an error bar. So we have to verify the same way.
I think if we had numerical results that we had, if we have numerical results that are positive with error bars, then I don't think it would. I mean, only 10% or 20% really very different, or 80% and 150% are really that different. We need things that are like 1% accurate. We want both of them. Great, but then it doesn't matter the error bars instead of that figure. That's what we want.
So I lower, and I write in this form, I lower these.
So I mean,